have an interesting story to tell today, and I've been looking forward to this. You know, brethren, we have the spring holy days coming up, creeping up slowly, but they'll be here before we know it. And we will once again begin to take a look at what the holy days mean, the symbolism involved of Egypt and Pharaoh and the Red Sea and the journey to the mountain of Jehovah to enter into a covenant with him. And what I want to look at today is all the steps kind of that led up to that. Because, you know, the children of Israel had to get into Egypt to begin with in order to even have an Exodus. And when we look at this story, what you'll see unfolding is a very complex, multi-level plan with thousands of steps and nuances involved. So that's what I'm going to be talking about. Whenever we look at a story in the Bible, like today we're going to be looking at the story of Joseph, we can look at the stories and we can be entertained by the stories, and we can also say, okay, the stories have good lessons. You know, this is the consequences of doing good, the consequences of doing bad, and we can learn from the stories. But if we take a step back, we can also see how every story is really a step in a much, much bigger plan. And you can see how all this hooks together. So we're going to do a deep dive into the story of Joseph and see how all of that kind of led up. We could start at the Garden of Eden, but we probably don't have enough time to do that. So we're going to fast forward up to Joseph. But to understand Joseph, we have to set the scene. You know, in the first scene, you can say Joseph is born, but we have to back up a little bit before that. So we're going to go back to when Jacob was young. So Jacob ran away from his brother Esau after tricking Isaac into giving him the birthright. Esau was a little upset. He wanted to kill Jacob. So Jacob split and went to his uncle's place where his mother was from. Well, there he met and he fell in love with the lovely Rachel. Well, he bargained with Uncle Laban to get Rachel as his wife. And all he had to do was work 7 years to make that happen. Well, at the 7 years, they went by so fast. But at the end of 7 years, the wedding was set. So they had the wedding party. But on the wedding night, perhaps after a little too much to drink, Leah was substituted for Rachel. Jacob didn't know or notice. The next morning, Jacob discovered the ruse. Uncle Laban's excuse was, well, the older sister should marry first. But Rachel is described as beautiful in both form and appearance. And Leah is described as having weak eyes. Now, there's speculation on what's meant by weak eyes or tender eyes. But in the context, it means that Leah was not as attractive as Rachel. So Uncle Laban used deception to get Leah married off. Well, then Uncle Laban bargained again with Jacob. Jacob wanted Rachel as his wife. He loved her. He wanted to marry her. He wanted to have a family with her. That's what the 7 years was for, and then here's Leah. But Uncle Laban, he says, well, two conditions. You can get Rachel. First of all, you got to complete the wedding week. And then at the end of the wedding week, you agree to another 7 years of work, and then you can have Rachel too. And it's only a week out, and then you get her. Well, Jacob really wanted to marry Rachel. Jacob really wanted to have a family with Rachel, and so he agreed to it. So he was at the mercy of Uncle Laban. Completing the wedding week meant he had to follow through with the marriage. He had to accept Leah as his wife. You know, if he had said no, and he had the opportunity to say no, he said, "You tricked me, it's fraud, no deal." He could have done that, but then he wouldn't get Rachel. So when we consider this, Jacob was not only tricked, he was then bribed, and he was coerced and, you know, manipulated. And what did he want? He just wanted to marry the woman he loved. Now, the Bible says that Leah was unloved. Well, why was Leah unloved? Well, you got to understand that Leah was complicit in this whole thing. She was part of the ruse. And Jacob wasn't happy about being tricked. I mean, if you had worked 7 years for something, and then it got substituted, and you still wanted it real bad, and now you get stuck with the older, less attractive sister, would you be very happy? Well, of course not. So Leah was unloved. She wasn't treated very well. She was treated like the older, less attractive sister who tricked me into marrying her. So to seal the marriage even more, the story reads, because Leah was unloved, Yehovah opened her womb and she had a son. So now the deal is sealed. So then she was still unloved, and so God continued to bless Leah, and she had another son. And then she had another son. And then she had another son. So the woman that Jacob loved, Rachel, zero kids. And so Leah, the unloved wife, is just having one kid after another. Boom, boom, boom. So if we go to Genesis 30, in verse 1, you see this scene. Genesis 30 and verse 1 says, "Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, 'Give me children or else I die.' And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, and he said, 'Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?' So she said, 'Here's my maid Bilhah. Go into her, and she'll bear me a child on my knees, that I also may have children by her.' Then she gave him Bilhah, her maid, as a wife, and Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son." So why did Jacob go along with Rachel's plan to use a surrogate? Well, this wasn't unheard of. That's exactly what Sarah did when she was unable to produce an heir for Abraham. She said, "Here, take Hagar. I'll have a child through Hagar." So this was not unheard of, especially in the family. What Jacob wanted all along was to have a family with the woman he loved. And so to do that through a surrogate, if no other way was possible, and, you know, his wife, Rachel, is saying, you know, "If I don't have a kid, I'm going to die." You know, so he went along with it. And, you know, because of that, there was a lot of work involved. If you remember, because Sarah and Abraham waited so long to have Isaac, you know, the thing with Hagar didn't work out, and they finally had their own kid. It was Isaac. And because they had to wait so long, then Isaac was a joy. He was named Laughter. He was special. He was the miracle baby. So here, you know, we see the scene kind of playing out. When Isaac and Rebekah, they also had problems getting pregnant. And so when the twins, Jacob and Esau, were born, they were the miracle babies. And they were special because they had to wait so long for these kids to be born. But when Bilhah had a baby, she got pregnant, then Rachel said, "God has judged my case. He's also heard my voice. This is in verse 6, by the way. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again. Oh, skip one. God has judged my case. He has also heard my voice and given me a son. Therefore, she called his name Dan, which is means judge. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel said, with great wrestlings, I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed. So she called his name Naphtali. Now, some people think that Jacob was just like this eager teenager that wanted as many women, as many wives as he could possibly have. But that's not really the case. You know, if you just look at the narrative, he did not want Leah. It was forced on him. And then he took Bilhah only because Rachel talked him into it and because she was so vexed not being able to compete with her older sister. And so this was all Rachel's idea. Jacob was just going along with it. May not have been the wisest thing to do, but you can understand this is the woman he loved. This is the woman he wanted to marry. This is a woman he wanted to have a family with, and this is a woman that couldn't get pregnant. And so they went along with that. Now, in verse 9, it says that when Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob as wife. Well, Jacob had already done this for Rachel, so he couldn't very well refuse Leah. So then Zilpah, Leah's maid, had two sons. And after that, Leah had two more sons. So Zilpah had two, then Leah had two more. Genesis in verse 22, then God remembered Rachel. Aha! God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. So she called his name Joseph and said, Jehovah shall add to me another son. So the son that Rachel and Jacob thought would never, ever happen, finally happened. And so Jacob is special. He was the 11th son, but he was the firstborn of Rachel. He was a miracle baby. That's why he was treated so special. And the other boys noticed. It was not, you know, just inside Jacob's mind that he was treated special. In Rachel's mind, he was treated special. They really treated him special. So for years, he was the obvious favorite. But then when Rachel died, giving birth to Benjamin, well, that changed it. Joseph was the firstborn of Rachel, the first one, fulfilling the dreams of having a family with Rachel. But then Benjamin was born. But Benjamin was a son of sorrow because Rachel died in childbirth. And so that was not a happy time. So Benjamin was still a son of Rachel, and later on in the story, you'll kind of see that he was special in a way, but he wasn't like Joseph. Joseph maybe and probably even resembled Rachel. I mean, she was his mom. Probably reminded Jacob of Rachel, and of, you know, that love that he had for her. So to understand the story of Joseph, you have to understand why Joseph was so special. And it was that connection with Rachel, the love of Jacob's life. Okay, so now let's turn to Genesis 37, and we're going to start reading about Joseph. Genesis 37 and verse 1. There's a lot of this, brethren, that I'm going to read because the Bible tells it better than I possibly could. Some of it I'm going to skip, but there is a lot of reading because the story is just so fascinating. It says, so Genesis 37, verse 1. Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock. This word feeding actually means shepherding. He was shepherding the flock with his brothers. The implication is, in some commentaries, it says that he was the head, may have been the head shepherd. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah. That would be Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. Also could be translated as a son of his old age. He made him a tunic of many colors. There were probably a lot of other gifts that he gave him, but the tunic plays into the story, so it's mentioned here. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him, and they could not speak peaceably to him. Verse 5, now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. He said to them, please hear the dream which I've dreamed. There were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed, your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaves. And his brother said to him, really? Shall you indeed reign over us? Shall you indeed have dominion over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams, for his words. Then he dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers. He said, look, I've had another dream. This time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me. Well, this did not endear him to his brothers, made them hate him even more. Let's go to verse 13, Genesis 37, 13. And Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Again, that just means shepherding. Come, I'll send you to them. So he said to him, here I am. And then he said, please go and see if it's well with your brothers, well with the flocks, and bring back word to me. So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he went to Shechem. Verse 18. Now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near, they conspired to kill him. Then they said to one another, look, this dreamer's coming. Come, therefore, let us now kill him, cast him in some pit, and then we'll say some wild beast has devoured him. We'll see what happens, what becomes of his dreams. But Reuben heard it. He delivered him out of the hands and said, hey, let's not kill him. Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and don't lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father. Verse 23. So it came to pass, when Joseph had come to his brothers, that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. Then they took him and cast him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. They sat down to eat a meal. Then they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices, balm, myrrh on their way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, what profit is there if we kill our brothers and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh, and his brothers listen. So the Midianite traders passed by. So the brothers pulled Joseph up, lifted him out of the pit, sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver, and they took Joseph to Egypt. Says in verse 29, then Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed, Joseph was not in the pit, and he tore his clothes. Now, Reuben was upset because he was gone. But how do you think Joseph was feeling? Do you think he went along with this and said, oh, vacation in Egypt? That sounds cool. You know, let's go to Egypt. No, he was fighting the whole way. He was kicking and screaming and probably suffered some physical abuse to be subdued. But, you know, he was not happy. This was not a happy time for Joseph. Then they took Joseph's special tunic and dipped it in goat's blood and presented it to his father Jacob. Verse 33, and he recognized it and said, it's my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted. And he said, I will go down into the grave to my son in mourning. Thus his father wept for him. Says in verse 37, now the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of the Pharaoh, captain of the guard. So this enters a new chapter in the story. But it's interrupted with a story about Judah and Tamar. So we're just going to fast forward to that. We're going to go to Genesis 39. Genesis 39 in verse 3 picks up the story. And his master saw that Jehovah was with him and that Jehovah made all he did to prosper in his hand. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. He is Potiphar, of course. He did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph. And she said what she said. But he refused. verse 11. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. Now, you know how some people have a problem with rejection? Well, Potiphar's wife had a little problem with rejection. And so it was when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside that she called to the men of her house, spoke to them, saying, see, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. So she kept his garment until his master came home. Then she spoke to him like these words, saying, the Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came in to mock me. What does it mean to mock me? It's an interesting term. Blah, blah, blah. You know, what does that mean? Well, the word for mock is sahak. It is Strong's number 6711. Flip over to Genesis 26 and verse 8. And we're talking about Isaac here. It says, now it came to pass when he, Isaac, had been there a long time that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked through a window and saw, and there was Isaac showing endearment to Rebekah, his wife. Now this word showing endearment, that's sahak. That's the same word that is translated as mock. So then Abimelech called Isaac and said, quite obviously she is your wife. So how could you say she's my sister? Isaac said, because I said, lest I die on account of her. Another instance where, you know, the word is translated as mock, but you got to kind of wonder what was really going on, is Genesis 21. So Genesis 21 and verse 9. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, scoffing. That's the word, sahak. So she saw, you know, it could be the equivalent of our word fooling around. So fooling around could mean you were playing, you were juggling, or it could have some sexual connotation. But whatever it was made Sarah want to get Ishmael and Hagar out of their Pocahontas pronto. So let's go back to Joseph now. Potiphar put Joseph in prison. And in no time, Joseph found favor with the keeper of the prison. He's put in charge. And, you know, it seems like whatever Joseph did, Jehovah blessed it. I wish I could hire Joseph. You know, that would be cool. Then we have the story of the butler and the baker who upset Pharaoh, were put into prison. The butler and the baker both have dreams. Joseph sees they're sad, and they explain they both had very disturbing dreams. Joseph asks to hear the dreams, and then he hears the dreams, and he gives him the interpretation. In 3 days, the butler will be returned to service, and in 3 days, the baker will be executed. Okay, Genesis 40 and verse 14. Joseph tells the butler, "But remember me when it's well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. For indeed, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I've done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon." Verse 20, "Now it came to pass on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants. And he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. Then he restored the chief butler to his butlership again, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him." Genesis 41, verse 1. "Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream, and behold," and then he goes on to explain the dream. So let's drop down to verse 8. "Now it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt, all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. Then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh, saying, 'I remember my faults this day, when Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in custody in the house of the captain of the guard. Both me and the chief baker, we each had a dream in one night, and each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now there was a young Hebrew man with us there, a servant of the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came to pass just as he interpreted for us. So it happened. He restored me to my office, and he hanged him.' Then Pharaoh," says, "I could use this right now. He sent and called Joseph. They brought him quickly out of the dungeon. He shaved, changed his clothes, and came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I've had a dream. There's no one who can interpret it, but I have heard it said of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it.' So Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, 'It's not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace.' Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Behold my dream. I stood on the bank of the river. Suddenly 7 cows came up out of the river, fine looking and fat. And they fed in the meadow. And then behold, 7 other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such ugliness as I have never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the first 7, the fat cows. When they had eaten them up, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were just as ugly as at the beginning. So I awoke. Then I also saw in my dream, and suddenly 7 heads came up on one stalk, full and good. And then behold, 7 heads withered thin and blighted by the east wind sprang up after them. And the thin heads devoured the 7 good heads. So I told this to the magicians, but there's no one who could explain it to me." So then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. And the 7 thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years, and the 7 empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout the land of Egypt, but after them 7 years of famine will arise. and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following, for it will be severe, and the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice, because the thing is established by God. God will shortly bring it to pass. Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man, set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land to collect one-fifth of the produce of the land in the seven plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming, and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. Then that food shall be as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land may not perish during the famine. Verse 37 continues, so the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and the eyes of his servants. Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, inasmuch as God has shown you all this, and there is no one as discerning and wise as you, you shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I've set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand, put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments of fine linen, and put a gold chain around his neck. And he made him ride the second chariot which he had, cried out before him, bowed the knee, set him over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh also said to Joseph, I'm Pharaoh, without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him as a wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. Now, On was a town that was famous. It was a big religious center. It wasn't a little town. At one time, it was the capital of Egypt. But it is on the edge of the land of Goshen. So it's right where the Nile Delta starts. And that comes in handy later on. Verse 48. So he gathered up all the food for the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, laid up the food in the cities. He laid up in every city the food of the fields which surrounded them. And Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea until he stopped counting, for it was immeasurable. And to Joseph were born two sons before the years of famine came, whom Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, which means to make me forget. For God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second he called Ephraim, which means fruitful. For God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. Then the 7 years of plenty, which were in the land of Egypt, ended. Now this is where the plot thickens. Drum roll, please. Genesis 42. Verse 1, when Jacob saw there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, why do you look at one another? I've heard that there's grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy some for us there, that we may live and not die. So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, lest some calamity befall him. So Benjamin's now the favorite. Genesis 42, verse 5, and the sons of Israel went to buy grain among those who journeyed, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land, and it was he who sold all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him, their faces to the earth. Joseph saw his brothers, and recognized them. But he acted as a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them. Then he said to them, "Where do you come from?" They said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." So Joseph recognized his brother, but they did not recognize him. You know, the last time they had seen Joseph, he was 17 years old. Now he was 38, 39 years old, somewhere in that ballpark. If he was made up like other Egyptians, aristocrats, then he would be in full makeup, mascara and all that stuff that the Egyptians did. Verse 9 says that, "Then Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them." And so now he's connecting. "I remember the dreams," but he says there's 10 brothers in his mind. There's supposed to be 11. So he comes out and he says, "You're spies. You've come to see the nakedness of the land." And they said, no, my lord. "Your servants have come to buy food. We're all one man's sons. We're honest men. Your servants aren't spies." They said, "No, you've come to see the nakedness of the land." And they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. In fact, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no more." But Joseph said to them, "It's as I spoke, you're spies. In this manner you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you and let him bring your brother, and you shall be kept in prison, that your words may be tested to see whether there is any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely you're spies." So he put them all in prison for 3 days. Gives them 3 days to think about it. Verse 18, "Then Joseph said to them the third day, 'Do this and live. For I fear God. If you're honest men, let one of your brothers be confined to your prison house, but you go and carry grain for the famine to your houses and bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified and you shall not die.'" So they did so. Then Joseph gave a command to fill their sacks with grain, restore every man's money to a sack, to give them provisions for the journey. This he did for them. So you would think that was like a favor. But so they loaded their donkeys with the grain, departed from there. But as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey feed at the encampment, he saw his money, and there it was in the mouth of the sack. So he said to his brothers, "My money's been restored. There it is in my pack." Then their hearts failed them, and they were afraid, saying to one another, "What is this that God has done to us?" We're being set up. So then they went to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, told him all that had happened to them. Verse 33. Then the man, they're talking to dad, "Then the man, the lord of the country, said to us, 'By this I will know you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me. Take food for the famine of your households and be gone, and bring your youngest brother to me, so I shall know that you're not spies, but that you're honest men. I will grant your brother to you, and you may trade in the land.' Then it happened, as they emptied their sacks, that surprisingly each man's bundle of money was in his sack. When they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. And Jacob, their father, said to them, 'You have bereaved me. Joseph is no more, Simeon is no more, and now you want to take Benjamin. All these things are against me.' Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, 'Kill my two sons if I don't bring him back. Put him in my hands and I'll bring him back.' But he said, 'My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead and he is left alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then that would bring down my gray hair and sorrow to the grave.'" Genesis 43 and verse 2. "And it came to pass when they had eaten up the grain that they had brought from Egypt, that their father said to them, 'Go back, buy us a little food.' But Judah spoke to him, saying, 'Dad, we can't go back unless we take Benjamin.'" Verse 6, "And Israel said, why did you deal so wrongfully with me as to tell the man whether you still had another brother? Verse 15. So the men took that present and Benjamin. They took double money in their hand and arose and went down to Egypt, and they stood before Joseph. Now when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of the house, take these men to my home, slaughter an animal, make ready, for these men will dine with me at noon. Now the men were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house. And they said, is it because of the money which was returned in our sacks the first time that we were brought in, so that he may make a case against us and seize us and take us as slaves with our donkeys? He's just trying to steal our donkeys. So the man brought the men to Joseph's house and gave them water. They washed their feet and gave their donkeys feed. Then they made the present ready for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that he would eat bread there. Now when Joseph came home, they brought him the present which was in their hand in the house and bowed down before him to the earth. Then he asked them about their well-being and said, is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? And they answered, your servant, our father, is in good health. He's still alive. And they bowed their heads down and prostrated themselves. Sounds like the stars and the sheaves, doesn't it? Then he lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, is this your younger brother of whom you spoke? And he said, God be gracious to you, my son. Verse 30. Now his heart yearned for his brother, so Joseph made haste and sought somewhere to weep. And he went into his chamber and wept there. And then he washed his face, probably had that mascara running down a little bit, and he restrained himself and said, serve the bread. So they set him a place by himself, and them by themselves, the Egyptians who ate with them by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat food with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. And they set before him the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth, and the men looked in astonishment at one another. It's like, how do they know our ages? Then he took servings to them from before him, but Benjamin's serving was five times as much as any of theirs. So they drank and were merry with him. And he commanded the steward of his house, saying, fill them in sacks of food as much as they can carry. Put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. Also put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his grain money. So he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. I know we're all familiar with this story, but at the end, I'm going to kind of wrap it up. You look at all the coincidences that happen, and it's just pretty amazing. Verse 3, as soon as the morning dawned, the men were sent away, and their donkeys, when they had gone out of the city, they were not far off. Joseph said to a steward, get up, follow the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one from whom my Lord drinks and with which he indeed practiced divination? You have done evil in so doing. So he overtook them and he spoke to them these same words and said to him, why does my Lord say these words? Far be it from us that your servant should do such a thing. Look, we brought back to you from the hand of Canaan the money which we found in the mouths of our sacks. Now then, how then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? With whomever your servants it is found, let him die. For we also will be my Lord's slaves. And he said, now also let it be according to your words. He with whom it is found shall be my slave, and you shall be blameless. Then each man speedily let down his sack to the ground, and each opened his sack. So he searched. He began with the oldest and left off with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes. Verse 13, and each man loaded his donkey and returned to the city. So Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house. He was still there, and they fell before him on the ground. And Joseph said to them, what deed is this that you've done? Did you not know that such a man as I can certainly practice divination? Then Judah said, "What shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Here we are, my Lord's slaves, both we and he also with whom the cup was found." But he said, "Far be it from me that I should do so. The man in whose hand the cup was found, he shall be my slave. And as for you, go up in peace to your father." Then Judah came near to him and said, "This is going to kill my father. Please let me take his place." Genesis 45, verse 1. Then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, "Make everyone go out from me." So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers, and he wept aloud. And the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "I'm Joseph. Does my father still live?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. And Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come near to me." So they came near. And then he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold in Egypt." Now see, up to this point, Joseph was speaking through an interpreter. He was speaking Egyptian to the interpreter, and the interpreter was listening to the boys, and it was going back and forth. But now the scene changes. And so now he's talking to his brothers, and he's not using an interpreter. He's speaking their language. "But now do not therefore be grieved or angry," this is verse 5, "with yourselves, because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years, the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God's made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen. You shall be near to me,'" because On was very near Goshen, "you and your children, your children's children, your flocks and your herds, and all that you have. So there I will provide for you," verse 11, "lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there are still 5 years of famine. And behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth that speaks to you. So you shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt and of all that you have seen, and you shall hurry and bring my father down here." Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brothers and wept over them, and after that his brothers talked with him. Now the report, verse 16, "Now the report of it was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, 'Joseph's brothers have come.' So it pleased Pharaoh and his servants well. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Say to your brothers, do this, load your animals and depart, go to the land of Canaan, bring your father and your households, come to me. I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you will eat the fat of the land. Now you are commanded to do this. Take carts out of the land of Egypt for your little ones, your wives, bring your father and come. Also do not be concerned about your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours.' Then the sons of Israel did so. And Joseph gave them carts according to the command of Pharaoh, and he gave them provisions for the journey. He gave to all of them, to each man, changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. And he sent to his father these things: 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and food for his father for the journey. And he sent his brothers away, and they departed. And he said to them, 'See that you do not become troubled along the way.'" So you got to stay out of trouble on your trip. "Then they went out of Egypt," verse 25. "They came to the land of Canaan to Jacob their father, and they told him, saying, Joseph is still alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart stood still because he did not believe them. But when they told him all the words that Joseph had said, and when he saw the carts which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. Then Israel said, "It is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die." Genesis 46, verse 1. So Israel took his journey with all that he had. He came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." So he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. And Joseph will put his hands on your eyes." Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones, their wives, on the carts which Pharaoh had sent them. So they took their livestock, their goods, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and they went to Egypt. Jacob and all his descendants with him, his sons and his daughters, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his descendants he brought with him. Now these were the names of the children. We're going to skip all that and go down to verse 28. Then he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out before him the way to Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen. So Joseph made ready his chariot and went to Goshen to meet his father Israel. He presented himself to him, fell on his neck, wept on his neck a good while, and Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face, because you are still alive." Then Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh and say to him, 'My brothers and those of my father's house who were in the land of Canaan had come to me, and the men are shepherds, for their occupation has been to feed livestock, and they have brought their flocks, their herds, and all they have.' So it shall be when Pharaoh calls you and says, 'What's your occupation?' You'll tell them that you're shepherds, and both we and our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians." So in Egypt, you got the Nile River, and the Nile is around the Nile is fertile for as far out as they can irrigate, but after that, it's kind of all desert. But when you get up into the Nile, it spreads out into this delta of all these little rivers and everything. It's cool to look at on a map, but that's the land of Goshen. It's this delta of the Nile. Genesis 47 and verse 1. Then Joseph went and told Pharaoh and said, "My father and my brothers, their flocks and their herds, and all that they possess have come from the land of Canaan, and indeed they are in the land of Goshen." He took five men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh said to his brothers, "What's your occupation?" They said, "Both we and our fathers are shepherds." Verse 5, then Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, saying, "Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Have your father and brothers dwell in the best of the land. Let them dwell in the land of Goshen." So Pharaoh was very grateful to Joseph for saving the day. Verse 11, Joseph situated his father and his brothers, gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. So Ramses referred to the whole land of Goshen. Verse 12, then Joseph provided his father's brothers and all his father's household with bread according to the number in their families. Now there was no bread, verse 13, there was no bread in the land, for the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the grain which they bought, And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. When they ran out of money, they said, "We're going to starve. We don't have any money." Joseph said, "Well, give me your animals." So he bought all their livestock, all the herds, all the horses, all the donkeys, everything. Verse 17, so they brought their livestock to Joseph. Joseph gave them bread in exchange. Next year, they said, "We don't have any money and we don't have any animals either." So Joseph said, "Well, I'll buy your land." And so he bought all the land, and all of the people then became indentured servants of Pharaoh. That's in verse 20. Just bought all the land of Egypt, Pharaoh, for every man of the Egyptians sold his field because the famine was severe upon them. So the land became Pharaoh's. And as for the people, he moved them into the cities from one end of the borders of Egypt to the other. Then Joseph said to the people, "Indeed, I bought you and your land this day for Pharaoh. Look, here's seed for you, and you'll sow, and it shall come to pass in the harvest that you shall give one-fifth to Pharaoh. Four-fifths shall be your own, as seed for the field and for your food, for those of your household, as food for your little ones." Now think about that. They were now owned by Pharaoh. Owned by Pharaoh. Pharaoh owned all the land. Oh, there you. But they only had to pay 20% tax. I wish I only had to pay 20% tax. And they call that slavery. Something to think about. Verse 27. So Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions there and grew and multiplied exceedingly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. Genesis 48, verse 1, it came to pass after these things that Joseph was told, "Your father is sick." So he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And Jacob was told, "Look, your son is coming to you." Israel strengthened himself and set up in his bed. And this is the story where Jacob reaches out to bless the boys, and he crosses his hands, and he puts his right hand on the younger instead of the older. And Joseph starts to move his hands, but he corrects it, and then he begins to prophesy. So he says in verse 19, his father refused and said, "I know, my son, I know. He shall become a people. And he also shall be great, but truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations." Now, it's interesting that Jacob was also the younger brother, wasn't he? Okay, so then he, next is he gathers all the kids together, and he goes through and he gives a prophecy for each one of those. Each one of the kids, and it's pretty interesting stuff. I don't have time to go through all that, but after this scene, then the brothers, Jacob dies, and the brothers are going, "Uh-oh, Joseph's gonna take revenge," and so they present themselves and they, you know, address their fears, and Joseph says, "Don't worry, I'm just gonna take care of you. You know, live long and live long and prosper," and you know, so everything was good. So that's how they ended up in Egypt. So now that we got the story, let's kind of look at that. Joseph had to be Jacob's favorite child, had to be born of his favorite wife, so that Jacob could give Joseph a special "I'm special" tunic. So he's got the "I'm special" tunic. So Joseph could receive the special treatment his whole life. So Joseph would think that he was better than his brothers. So Joseph would be eager to share his dreams of dominating his brothers. So Joseph could wear his "I'm special" tunic to check on his brothers for dad. So his brothers would want to kill him, so that Reuben could intervene, so they could throw Joseph into a dry pit that happened to be nearby, So the brothers could eat lunch and contemplate their next move, so that they would notice a caravan of Ishmaelites heading to Egypt. So Judah could recognize an opportunity to get rid of Joseph and make a profit. So they could sell Joseph to the Ishmaelites. So they could fake Joseph's death by covering his I'm special tunic with blood, giving it to Jacob, so that Jacob would come to the conclusion on his own that Joseph was dead, so that Joseph could get to Egypt and be bought by Potiphar, so that Joseph could learn to speak fluent, high-level Egyptian in a wealthy household with a cheating wife and a jealous husband who had enough authority to put people in jail, so that Joseph could develop some administrative skills, so that Potiphar's wife could try to seduce him, so that Potiphar's wife would resent being turned down and accuse Joseph of attempted rape, so that Potiphar would put Joseph in prison, so that Joseph could expand on his administrative skills in prison and end up running the place, so that Joseph would be in a position to meet the butler and the baker, so that he could interpret their dreams, so the forgetful butler could remember Joseph 2 years later when Pharaoh had his dream, so Joseph could find favor with Pharaoh and take over the Egyptian government. So Joseph could save Egypt and Canaan from starvation and make Pharaoh super wealthy. So Pharaoh would be happy to give Joseph's family the most fertile land in all of Egypt, so that Joseph's family could grow into millions of people where their numbers would make them a threat to a future Pharaoh, so that Pharaoh could try to control the Israelite birth rate and enslave the people, so that Jehovah could save Israel, bring them out of the most powerful empire with the biggest army of all time using amazing miracles, so he could demonstrate his mighty power and show that the gods of Egypt were fake and no gods at all, so that he could humble Israel and enter into a covenant with them, so that we could have the story and the examples, so that we could learn about his plan for our salvation, so that then we could be called and chosen to enter into a new covenant with him based on better promises, so we could learn about Jesus and the sacrifices that were necessary to cover our sins, so we could appreciate the seriousness of sin, so we could repent, so we could be baptized, so that we could receive the Holy Spirit, so we could be forgiven and begin the process of overcoming, so we could develop a closer relationship with Jehovah, so we could learn to live by faith and depend on Jehovah no matter what, so we could grow in grace and knowledge, so we could serve as a light set on a hill as an example to others, so that we could be born into God's family and have eternal life. So in the military, they have this process they go through to plan out a battle. It's called the backwards planning model. So it's like, okay, here's the objective. Now, what does it look like right before that objective? And then what does it look like right before that? And then what does it look like right before that? Well, if you kind of run this whole so-to's thing backwards, you would never come up with this story. But it's clear that God had it planned. Well, you know, in our time right now, there are some things to be concerned about. There are some funny things going on with the media and governments around the world, and we're at a time where there's a lot of concern. But we need to remember that Jehovah is not surprised by anything that's going on. He's using everything that's going on to bring about his plan. He called Nebuchadnezzar his servant. In Job, he called Satan his servant, leads him around like a pet to bring about his plan. So at this time, we're looking at all this stuff. This is not the time for us to be super concerned and worried. This is the time for us to practice our faith. Part of the lessons that we're here to learn is that to trust God. You read all the stories in the Old Testament, And what God was wanting people to do is trust him. I'll take care of it. If you just do what you're supposed to do, I'll take care of it. You don't have to worry about anything. I'll take care of it. All you have to do is obey me and follow the rules. We have the opportunity in the face of threats that we don't really comprehend at this time. We have the opportunity to practice our faith, to know God's in control. God is working everything out for our benefit. We might have to go through some stuff that is uncomfortable. Jacob went through a lot of stuff that was uncomfortable. Jacob, you know, when you really look at the story, Jacob lived a life of one disappointment after the other. When he was talking to Pharaoh, he says, "My years have been long and difficult." One disappointment after another. One of the reasons I think that you know, one of the facts that indicates that Jacob was converted is because he lived a life of trials, one trial after another. And sure, there was a lot of blessings. You know, Laban messed with his wages, but he was blessed over and over again. He had to take his wives and run because he was afraid of Laban. And, you know, he was afraid of Esau. He was just one frustration after another. Rachel couldn't have a baby. It was just, you know, it was a life of one disappointment after another. So, brethren, we might have to experience some things that are uncomfortable, some things that don't make us happy, some things that aren't the way that we would want them to be. But Jehovah is working out. He is orchestrating things in such minute detail for our benefit. Even the trials that we experience are for our benefit, and there's limits on every one of them. So that's what I wanted to just take a look at this story of Joseph and look at all the crazy steps that had to be coordinated for that to happen. But when Jacob was in the middle of it, he couldn't see it. When Joseph's in the middle of it, he couldn't see it. We can't see it either. We're too close to the forest. This last feast, Vivian Blank shared with me a documentary on all the miracles that have happened to Israel in order for that country to come into existence and to win and fight the wars that it has. And it's on YouTube, but I would recommend everybody go to YouTube and look at it. Watch it. It's called Against All Odds. So Against All Odds, Israel Survives. And when you start looking at all the miracles, I'm talking about the War of Independence, the Yom Kippur War, the, you know, all the things that happened, it's not just one. I've got a list here of like 18 stories of miracle after miracle after miracle that happened from 1948 up to now on how God has created this little nation, and then he's protected this little nation, and that, you know, he's brought back the Hebrew language, which had been, you know, lost as a conversational language. If you look at all the things that God is doing, God is in control. He is not surprised by any of this. He wasn't surprised when Hitler was building death camps. He, brick by brick, he knew they were being built. He's not surprised that internment facilities are being staffed in our country. He's not surprised. What's it for? We don't know. We don't know. But what we do know is that our Father, our God, is in control. He loves us, and he's going to take care of us no matter what.